From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Dream Interpretations. Here's what's happening. Well, that 23-year-old man linked to that deadly bombing that rocked Austin, Texas, and surrounding areas over the past month had a target list of future locations that he also wanted to strike. The authorities have discovered that Mark Anthony Condit had a target list of future targets, including residences and addresses discovered by authorities. He blew himself up when he was, well, almost apprehended by police. He did leave a confession on tape that said, "I wish I were sorry, but I am not." And he called himself a psychopath. Horrible story. U.S. stocks falling sharply, pressured by worries of a potential trade war and a decline in tech stocks. The broader market was also pressured by a decline in bank stocks as well. And the Federal Reserve has lifted its key interest rate from 1.5% to 1.75%. It's the highest level since 2008. Andre Eglashon, the author of Thieves in the Temple. Andre, what does this all mean to us with these rates creeping back up?
Well, George, I've had friends ask me, you know, today, is now the right time to buy a house? I would say, well, given the fact that the Fed is going to raise interest rates, and the Fed is concerned about all the inflation that's built up in the pipeline now, I instructed him that, you know, considering the fact that money is going to cost you more as time rolls along, I think now is a good time to go ahead and do whatever it is that you're planning on doing. I mean, this was the fifth largest point drop in the history of the Dow, with 724 points. Yeah. So it's all based on fear. It doesn't matter what the fundamentals are. The market doesn't pay attention to that. It's all based on fear and uncertainty. Prices are going up because of the tariffs that we've seen. And uncertainty is driving the market down lower. So we're in a very, you know, a critical time right now. And I think you can expect the Fed to be more aggressive. I think the key point will be if the Fed makes a 50 basis points move.
Yeah, that's 0.5.
Yeah, exactly. That's a 0.5%. If the Fed makes that move, we better all get seriously worried because we know that higher prices are on the way.
And that could slow the economy down tremendously, can it?
Absolutely, it will slow the economy down. The Fed, that's their main worry. They're worried about inflation. There is a lot of inflation that's built up in the pipeline right now. And this Fed will be aggressive if they have to be. As long as they do quarter, you know, basis point rise, you know, 0.25%, as long as they do it as we expect 2 to 3 more times this year, it will signal that everything is okay. But if they go 50 basis points, George, I think we all should be concerned.
Interesting. Okay, thanks, Andre. Appreciate it. Andre Eglashon. Well, is this more chaos in the White House or not? President Trump has announced that the former United Nations Ambassador John Bolton will replace General H.R. McMaster as his National Security Advisor effective April 9th. The president's announcement came after months of speculation over whether McMaster would resign or be fired from his post. They say it was a mutual decision. President Donald Trump's lead lawyer, John Dowd, has resigned from the president's personal legal team, handling the response to the Russian investigation. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, the author of The Genius of the Beast. Howard, what do you think about what's going on at the White House these days?
Well, on the surface, today's replacement of H.R. McMaster as National Security Advisor with John Bolton looks like a shift of Donald Trump's North Korean policy. Why? Because H.R. McMaster has been a North Korea hawk. He has leaned on the Pentagon to give Donald Trump military options, ways to wipe North Korea's nuclear and missile capabilities off the face of the map, which is perfectly sane. We need those. But John Bolton, the man who will take over as National Security Advisor on April 9th, is an even bigger North Korea hawk. Less than a month ago, in the February 28th issue with the Wall Street Journal, Bolton wrote an op-ed called "The Legal Case for Striking North Korea First." Now, what's the problem for you and me with military strategies of McMaster and Bolton? World War I, you and I have discussed this roughly a year ago. World War I was kicked off by an accidental domino effect.
Yep.
Germany and Austria attacked a tiny, isolated country, Serbia. No problem, right? Two of the biggest military nations in the world beating up on a pipsqueak. But Serbia had a string of allies, including Britain, France, Italy, and the United States. When the Germans and Austrians attacked this insignificant nation, the pipsqueak's allies were sucked into war. Everyone thought that war would be over in 6 weeks or less, and that it would involve very few casualties. That was wrong. The war would last 4 years, and it would kill 37 million people. Now, like Serbia in 1914, North Korea is not alone in this world. Like Serbia, North Korea has allies. Those allies include Russia, China, Iran, Syria, Venezuela, and Cuba. Two of those allies, Russia and China, have nuclear weapons mounted on sophisticated rockets aimed at America's cities. John Bolton, our new national security advisor, may be able to make a good case for striking North Korea first to the audience of the Wall Street Journal. But if we strike first without bringing Russia and China to our side, if we do it without neutralizing Russia and China with diplomacy, we may be signing a death warrant for America. And there's one more thing. McMaster was not ousted because of his approach to Korea. He was tossed out because he refused to kiss Donald Trump's behind. He was tossed out because he refused to feed Donald Trump's wild delusion that Russia had nothing to do with Trump's election and that the Russian release of Hillary Clinton's emails had no influence on Trump's win in the Electoral College. Trump told us very plainly in a February 17th tweet his real reason for firing McMaster. He said, "General McMaster forgot to say that the results of the 2016 election were not impacted or changed by the Russians, and that the only collusion was between Russia and crooked Hillary, the Democratic National Committee, and the Democrats." Close quote. McMaster failed to tell Donald Trump that he is a stable genius and that his election has been the greatest thing in the history of politics. In other words, to feed Donald Trump's ego, we may be playing with a nuclear war, a war that starts with North Korea and ends up Lord knows where.
Well, we will see what happens in May when Donald Trump, the president, and Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, get together. Howard, thank you. A Tennessee man wrongfully imprisoned for more than 3 decades for rape and burglary convictions was awarded $1 million from the state. Lawrence McKinney, he's now 61, was exonerated by the governor 9 years ago after new DNA evidence led to his 1978 convictions being overturned. Is that enough money? You give up 31 years of your life and you get $1 million? I don't know. And listen to this bizarre story. A man dies after lodging his head into the footrest of his electronic seat at a movie theater in the United Kingdom. Now, the man had dropped his cell phone and was trying to retrieve it in between the theater's gold-class seats at the end of the film. Now, the 3 gold-class rooms at the complex offer a fully licensed bar, and they're only available to attendees over 18. Well, as he bent down, the reclining electric seat's footrest clamped down on the man's head and continued to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze, and he died. Wow, what a bizarre way to go. California, a Humboldt County rancher, has been arrested after a 5-month investigation, which led to authorities to hundreds of malnourished and dead livestock across the suspect's land. A collection of plastic afloat in the Pacific Ocean is growing rapidly, according to a new scientific estimate. The predictions suggest a buildup of about 80,000 tons of plastic in what they call the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is floating between California and Hawaii. Do you like blueberry muffins? Well, some blueberry muffins sold by cafes and supermarkets contain more than the recommended daily intake of sugar for adults, according to research. So just read those labels. Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, broke his silence on the Cambridge Analytica data privacy scandal, writing in Facebook that users that the company made a mistake. His mea culpa may not have been enough to reassure investors. Facebook shares have plummeted some 13%. Since this thing was announced. Up next, we're going to talk about digital privacy and cyber data mining next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. With all this talk about cybersecurity and breaches, we thought we'd bring in a cybersecurity expert. And we have John Horst with us, a cybersecurity engineer with more than 20 years of information technology experience. John, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Can you shed a little light for us on this Facebook issue and just what you think happened and why everybody seems to be so up in arms about it?
Oh, this is just the tip of the iceberg. One of the things that I like to, the way I like to describe it, is things that happen above the table, things that happen under the table. What Facebook is doing, what they have done with Cambridge Analytica, and by the way, Cambridge Analytica just took a page from the Obama data analytics team, did exactly the same thing that the Obama team did. And they're playing in the gray areas of the privacy policies that they issue. Now, these privacy policies, nobody reached them. I think someone said you'd probably have to spend 2 or 3 weeks full time to read the privacy policies of all of the things that we subscribe to or use. And so they'll go out and they will play in the gray area and allow companies to access this data. They'll basically monetize this data for a wide variety of purposes, the vast majority of which we never know about. We've never been asked. We've never been given the opportunity to say yes or no.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, it's amazing what's happening in the cyber world these days. How many breaches and everything else, John?
Oh, yeah. What we have to understand is, let's start with the breaches. Let's start with our own identities, our own privacy. In cybersecurity, we have a concept we call the threat surface or the attack surface. And in an information technology system, depending on how it's engineered, you can have a very large attack surface or you can have a very small one. Obviously, it's better to have a system that has a smaller attack surface. Well, if you think of your privacy, you think of your identity, you think of all of the data that's out there, either that it directly relates to your identity, like your Social Security number, or that arises from your economic activity, and that might be spending patterns, credit card records, things of that nature. You think of all of that data out there. The more data out there about you, the more data that pertains to your identity, the more data arising from your economic activity that's out there in the cloud, out there in the wild, that's the attack surface when it comes to attacking your identity, attacking your privacy. So there is no better way to secure your identity than to minimize that attack surface. And that basically means do everything we can to minimize the amount of data out there in the cloud, out there in the wild, that pertains to our identity. Now, the hard part is how we go about doing that.
Exactly, because, I mean, even nowadays, John, people get emails that look like they're from their bank or something, or their credit card company, or a retailer. I mean, they look like they have the logo on it and everything else, and it says, you know, please go to this site and, you know, check your data or update your profile or whatever. How many people get caught up into those scams?
Yeah, quite a few. The one thing that people don't do that they should be doing is when you see a hyperlink on an email, you hover your mouse pointer over that link before you click it. Don't click it right away. And there will be a little yellow box that will pop up right above your mouse pointer. We call it the tooltip. And that tooltip icon will show you the URL that you're about to click to. Sometimes in some browsers, you can see that on the status bar on the lower left. You look at that URL. Does that URL actually look like the URL of the company that supposedly this email is
coming
from?
That's a good point.
But when you see that it doesn't, and you see like a .ru on it, you know, Russia, then you're looking at that and you're thinking, no, this isn't quite right. One of the major cell phone carriers, I got an email from them saying that I had changed my password, and I have not changed my password. So I started looking at that, and I'm like, nah, you're not going to get me.
And it looks so good, though. Doesn't it look so authentic?
They're very, very good at making it look real.
Now, who's doing this stuff, John?
Oh, these are hackers, and they come from all over the place, because if you get a bank credentials, credit card number, debit card number, those things can go for hundreds of dollars when they're fresh. The value of that kind of information drops quickly as it becomes stale, because people realize that something's wrong and they cancel the account.
So the hackers make their money by selling your data. They're not the ones who go and try to hit your bank account or whatever. They're just simply selling it off.
Right. They're selling it off to somebody who can go then make an ATM card, drain your account. The bank looks at that and says, wait a minute, something's wrong, and they cancel it. But by then, they've already gotten a couple $100. And so you figure, if you can harvest tens of thousands of these numbers, no one of these numbers is going to make you a lot of money. Most ATMs have a limit. But you get a couple $100 off of this number, a couple $100 off of that number, and if you've got a really good phishing campaign out there and you've harvested 10,000-15,000 numbers, that adds up to quite a bit of money.
Oh, my God, yeah. Now, do these people physically have to go to ATMs, the thieves, or how do they do that?
Yeah, eventually they will. Eventually somebody will go to an ATM, but it's usually a cutout.
Now, what's a cutout?
A cutout is where you'll go to a homeless person and say, I'll give you $50 if you'll go take this card, go to that ATM, here's the PIN number.
Because they know the camera's going,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. They know the camera's going, so the homeless person goes there, takes out the money, and the person is just far enough away so that they're not on camera.
So the homeless person can't run away, right?
Right, yeah. And they're the cutout, and they, of course, if they get hauled into the police department, they'll be like, well, this guy gave me...
Yeah, and they don't know the guy's name or anything?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. But, when we talk about data, cybersecurity, data ownership, let's go back to this whole Facebook thing. Let me give you a couple other examples, because they're even more creepy.
Okay, sure.
Creepier than Facebook. You can get one of those kits where you swab your cheek, and you put that swab into a little vial. You send it to one of these companies.
Oh, the DNA tests.
Exactly. They send you back this DNA report, shows you where you come from. They sell that data. They will take your DNA genomic sequence, they will package it up with a bunch of other customers, and they'll sell it off to medical researchers. Now, one of these companies says that if you ask them to delete the data, they will. You can't get your report later on if you lose the report.
Yeah, once it's gone, it's gone.
Another one says that they will remove your personal identifiable information, your name and things, from the data, the genomic data, and then they sell it for medical research. The problem with both of these is if they go bankrupt, a bankruptcy court is going to adjudicate the sale of the company assets. And I'm going to tell you right now, the most valuable asset will be the data. And it will be sold in a bankruptcy court with no protections, no controls. The privacy policies are null and void. None of that is enforceable coming out of a bankruptcy proceeding. We have no way of knowing where that data is going to go or what's going to be done with it. This is our genomic sequence. This is the essence of who we are. And we haven't even begun to start asking the right questions about this, because we think we own the data, but we don't. When we drop that swab in that vial, we send it off, they run our genomic sequence on their computer system. They own that data.
They have it.
They have it, and it is their intellectual property right. So let's take that and talk about cell phones. When you call a friend on your cell phone, you are originating data on your carrier's network. Your carrier owns that data. You do not own that data. This really is what has to change. We need to be able to turn to a cell phone carrier and say, when I've paid your bill, you are required to delete my data because it's my property, not yours.
That's right, exactly.
That's where we need to go.
Hold on, John. I want to talk more about this with you, and we'll also get into the deep state and just tell us what you think they are doing with our vital information. John Horst with us, a special guest. We'll take phone calls with him next hour. If you want to share a horrid cyber story with us next hour, please do so. Well, less than a month now, we're live in Scottsdale, Arizona for our live stage show with some incredible guests talking about all kinds of great things. Spirit traveling, astronomy, UFOs, special panel. It's going to be at the Virginia G. Piper Theater, and you can get tickets through the link at our website at coasttocoastam.com. Right at the top of the homepage, click events. It'll take you straight to the Scottsdale site, and then pick your tickets, and let's fill it up. Now, if you don't have a computer, try to remember this box office phone number. If not, just remember the theater, Virginia G. Piper Theater. But their phone number is 480-499-8587, 480-499-8587, or you can simply go to coasttocoastam.com and click the events at the top of the homepage, April 21st, Scottsdale, Arizona. Then June 9th, we're at the Silverton Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, aren't we, Thomas?
Oh, boy, this one's going to be whopping. This is rolling the dice in Vegas is what we're calling it, but the Silverton Casino in Vegas, like you just mentioned. Three guests. We have Area 51 expert John Greenwald. We have our own George Knapp, investigative journalist. And we have the man who died twice and was hit by lightning, Mr. Danion Brinkley. It's going to be a whopping show. George, you'll sing a few songs. We'll have a live band. And we have a couple surprises. So you don't want to miss this one. Tickets and information is at silvertoncasino.com. Or you can call 702-263-7777 and hit number 4.
I heard rumors that Elvis may be in the building.
Yeah,
is that true?
You know, I can't deny, I can't confirm.
Thank you very much. And again, just go to her website, click events at coasttocoastam.com, and the entire link will open up for you. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. John Horst with us. We're going to take phone calls next hour, you know, share some of your nightmare stories of cybersecurity. John, let's get back to cell phones, then let's talk about the deep state. Tell us a little bit more about your thoughts about cell phones and usage with those companies.
Yeah. What the first thing that we have to step back and understand is this whole concept of the FISA warrant, this Foreign Intelligence Court, and these secret warrants that we hear about. These warrants are issued and served on the big telecom and the big telecom companies, cell phone companies, and they require that these companies turn over massive troves of cell phone data and cell phone metadata. Now, if the warrant is being issued to the telecom company, it must mean that the telecom company is recognized as the owner of the data.
Uh-huh.
If we flip that and we become the owner of the data, and I have a thing that I advocate for called the Digital Liberties Amendment that would do this. If we become the owner of the data, then the warrant has to be served on us if they want access to our data, our property. That I effectively would drive a stake through the heart of the surveillance state. That is really all it takes to really put the deep state in its place, is to assert a property right ownership claim over the data that arises from our economic activity. And that would certainly include cell phone calls and the like.
Now, the deep state, are they grabbing our info too?
Oh, they're grabbing everything. Grabbing everything. They're collecting everything they possibly can collect as it traverses the internet and the telecom data links. Because again, this is data. It is being transmitted by companies that own these systems, therefore the companies own the data. We don't have any control over this. And yes, I think they're collecting pretty much everything that they can possibly collect. Now, let's go back to cell phones here, and I think it's important for us to understand what I think is happening, because there's a science to data mining. the other term that we use for this is knowledge management. And in knowledge management, you have three specific terms that we have specific definitions for. The first is data. You can take a person's name. Like, for example, me, you can take my name. You can take a date in, a month, date, and year. And those two pieces of data standing alone might not mean anything. You introduce this thing called metadata, which is something that describes data. And you take that date and you add this metadata term called birthday. And now you have a name, you have a date, and you have this metadata descriptor called birthday. Now you have information. Data can be any one piece of data, a name, a date, what have you. It can also be the metadata that describes the data. When you put all of those things in context together, now you have what we call information. And then if you can collect a massive trove of information, you can run it through statistical models, and you can begin to predict behavior going forward into the future. That's what we would call knowledge. I want you to think about the hurricane forecasting maps that we see when hurricane season comes. And we're watching the news, and they show us these maps which predict the path and intensity of the storm. You're seeing the byproduct of this knowledge management science. They take pieces of data that have to do with meteorology. They bring it into context with other similar pieces of data. Now they have information. And then they run statistical models on the information, and they predict something going out into the future.
Well, and on the face of it, John, it sounds exciting, doesn't it?
It's interesting, and it's exciting, and I can see value. So let's take, for example, cell phones. Let's say that you pull down this massive trove of cell phone usage, and you establish a statistical norm for what normal cell phone usage looks like. And then you go out, and let's say that you pull cell phone records of known organized crime bosses that have been caught and prosecuted. We've got their phones. We've been able to analyze their phone traffic. And we compare the phone traffic of organized crime bosses with the statistical norm that we developed because we pulled this whole massive trove of cell phone records out. Now we can start to say, now we know what organized crime use of cell phones might look like. And you can talk about organized crime, you can talk about terrorism. So there are ways to use this data positively for legitimate law enforcement purposes. I don't understand why it has to be under the table. If this is what they want to do, let them tell us. And let us decide whether that's something that we want our data used for. So that, to me, is the whole thing about the data ownership and understanding what's out there and having the right to turn around and say, no, I don't want you holding on to that. That's my property. I don't want you holding on to that. I want you to delete it. We can talk about Experian, the recent hack.
And who hacked into them? Who do you think?
They don't know. And that's one of the things about hacking, and this goes to the whole Russia narrative thing. Hacking is the ultimate in copycat crime. It is absolutely the ultimate form of copycat crime, because once tools get put out there in the wild, and once a hack is successful, it's like pressing play and record. Someone else can go take the same thing, and they can run the same hack, mm-hmm. and they can forge a lot of the metadata that's generated during the hack and make it look like it was done by somebody else. So there's really no way to know who did it. What was shocking was how bad the cybersecurity protections were in that particular case of the credit monitoring agency. We should be able to tell all of the credit monitoring agencies, that's my property. I don't want you having that. You have to delete it. Now, that might make it hard to get a loan, but we should have that right. We should have the right. We should have the choice. of basically saying, get rid of that data. Every system you have your data deleted from, you are shrinking the attack surface. You are making the threat surface smaller and smaller and smaller. And that is the best way to protect your identity.
What is your take, John, on products like Bitcoin?
Bitcoin. Bitcoin is fascinating. Right? Bitcoin is not really a product. It looks like it is because you can buy Bitcoin, and what people are doing is they're using it as a speculative investment. You're seeing a lot of volatility in the price, but that has more to do with the Federal Reserve and the money supply than it does anything.
Right. They're fighting back, by the way, with this.
Yeah. Well, if you think of your bank statement. So I want you to imagine you pull your bank statement out of your file folder. Your bank statement is a ledger. It is a ledger of inputs and deposits and withdrawals. Now I want you to think about the name, your name and address, maybe on the upper left-hand corner. Think that that's no longer there, and in place of your name and address is just this string of random characters.
All right.
That's your wallet ID on the blockchain.
For Bitcoin.
Yeah, for Bitcoin. Okay. And that's your wallet ID, which is associated with how much Bitcoin you have.
1111111, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. As you're transacting business, the ledger maintains a record of those transactions. Now, so imagine that your bank statement is anonymized, so to speak, and there's a copy of your bank statement on 20 million different computers throughout the world. Now it would become all but impossible for you to forge that ledger because there are so many other copies out there that your block, if you will, can be compared against other blocks on the blockchain. And it makes it next to impossible statistically for somebody to successfully forge a transaction.
That's a good thing, right?
Yes, it is. It's absolutely a good thing. If you look at your bank statement, before we talk about the issue of trust, because this is really what Bitcoin drives down to, think about escrow. Think about if you buy a house, you open an escrow. Bitcoin started this out as being a distributed ledger. Think of like a distributed bank statement. Ethereum came along and added to it the concept of a distributed escrow. In an escrow, when you open escrow, the escrow is a third party, and as certain agreed upon things are done, the escrow company releases money from one party to another. On the blockchain, that all happens automatically now. The blockchain and with Ethereum offers the feature of a smart contract, which is just a distributed ledger. In addition to your bank statement, you have particular steps that you've agreed upon with another party. And as those steps are fulfilled, the ether, the coin, is transacted between you and the other party. You're debited, they're credited. And it's all multiplied throughout millions, tens of millions of nodes on the network, so it's all but impossible to forge. So we're seeing, and one of the things I tell my friends, if you're invested in escrow companies or title companies, you might want to think twice about that because the blockchain is going to basically kill those business models off.
You mean when people buy houses, they're going to be doing it through these blockchains?
They're already doing it.
Really?
It's already happening. Real estate transactions are being settled on the Ethereum blockchain already.
With real cash, though.
Well, the cash, the fiat money is being used to buy Ether, and then the transaction is actually conducted with the Ether coin.
But, I mean, can you go to the bank after that?
You can convert the Ether back to fiat. I don't normally think of it as going to the bank, but most of the main exchanges like Coinbase will allow you to convert the cryptocurrency to fiat currency, and then push it over via PayPal into your bank account. So it eventually gets there.
What happens when it all collapses, John? When technology fails? Are we going to have a disaster?
Yeah, that's the problem, is this whole thing is predicated on electricity.
Exactly. So, the grid goes down. Yeah. They're all up a creek.
Yep, you're absolutely up a creek. Your wallet ID is absolutely useless to you if the grid goes down. There will never be a time when we will not have a need for cash of some sort. And if we don't have cash, we end up resorting to barter, and then things really go south.
Were you in the Navy? Were you in the Navy, John?
No, I was not. I grew up with it. My father was, but I have worked in cybersecurity for the Navy.
Okay, because they've had a lot of issues lately in terms of collisions and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and I mean, coming from my background there, I can talk a little bit about what's happening. Our maintenance, this isn't anybody's fault, let me just say that. We have had an entire generation of civilian workers go into retirement with the baby boom generation. And the civilian workforce that shepherds our Navy ships through their maintenance cycle, we have a lot of younger people coming up behind them. And they don't have the hundreds of years of experience that these baby boomers had. Things fall through the cracks. We miss a deadline, and the ship doesn't get out into its training cycle on time. Well, what happens when our sailors don't have their ship out for training? They don't learn how
their basic training.
Yeah, they don't learn basic seamanship, and then they get in collisions. And it's especially a problem out in the Seventh Fleet.
Well, you would think the captain of the ship would know what was going on, John.
Well, the captain of the ship is going to have to depend upon the navigator. It's supposed to be a very tightly choreographed dance, if you will, especially if you are in a very, what's the word I'm looking for, a very busy, congested ceiling like you are out in Japan and Singapore and the Straits of Malacca, especially. And that's where the John McCain got hit.
So what would you fix cyber-wise if you had a magic wand and just said, this is done?
If I had a magic wand, I would probably put the magic wand down and take a baseball bat and beat my colleagues over the head some. We are our own worst enemy. We tend to get all wrapped up in the technology. We want to feel these cutting-edge, super secure, hyper-lockdown systems, and we end up crippling ordinary people's ability to do their job.
John, hold on. We're going to hit a break at the top of the hour here, but we're going to come back. We'll talk more about cybersecurity. We'll take your questions and also stories. Share with us the very weird things that might have happened to you.